Hello and welcome to episode 51 of the Spiritual Success Podcast. Today I'm talking to Colleen Emily, and she's a life coach and NLP practitioner who works exclusively with parents. And I was very eager to have this conversation today because it's a topic that I can't talk on yet. I don't have any children of my own, but I know for a lot of spiritual entrepreneurs and just spiritual people in general, of course, being a parent is one of the biggest, most important things in their lives. And trying to juggle everything else with that huge responsibility can certainly be a challenge. So Colleen helps people with their confidence. She helps parents who feel like they've lost their confidence, sense of identity. She's also a single parent herself, so she has a 10-year-old son. And in this conversation, we talk about science and spirituality because she did her degree in neuroscience and she has a very scientific approach to her coaching. But she's also, of course, been on a spiritual journey herself. And she also even talks about when she was younger and she was drawn to metaphysical shops. So I just absolutely love this conversation. And if you're thinking of becoming a parent or you already are a parent, then you're definitely going to get some great advice within this episode. So I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the Spiritual Success Podcast with me, Liz Roberta, a place for spiritual people who want to grow, learn, and succeed in life and in business. I'll be talking to successful spiritual entrepreneurs, authors, and thought leaders to understand what creates a meaningful and soul-aligned life. So come on in, lightworkers, this is your time to shine. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm so excited. This has been such a long time in the planning and we're finally here.
It has. So I met you, I'm trying to think when it was. It was definitely over a year ago, probably close to 2 years actually, at one of Rose Radford's events in London. And that was the first time that we crossed paths. I think it was nearly about 2 years ago.
I know. And that's scary that it's been 2 years because it definitely doesn't feel like it. And I remember chatting with you and there was a few other people that I still talk to that were there. And it was just wonderful to actually talk to people that you've met on Instagram. And now we finally get to do a podcast episode together.
Yes, I know. I'm so grateful because as I was saying to you just before we hit record, this is a topic I can't talk about. I don't have children. It's not something I've actually covered on the podcast so far, but I know for people who do have children, it's a huge part of their life. And then for people who are entrepreneurs like you and trying to run an online business and be a mother or a father at the same time, I imagine it's probably very, very challenging. It's something I have a lot of fear around because I want to have children in the next few years. But my only resistance around it, I know I definitely want to have them, but my only resistance is how on earth am I going to juggle my career, my business, my work that I absolutely love with being a parent? And trying to deal with that mum guilt and all those kind of things. So that's really what I wanted to talk about today, because I know you're an expert in this. Not only are you a mother yourself, a single mother of a lovely 10-year-old boy, but you work with other parents as well. And you coach them and you work with people who feel as though they've lost their confidence and sense of identity when they became a parent. So what was your story and how did you get into this line of work?
So I know you ask people this and I've been thinking about it since we've talked about it, and my story is not, you know, an epiphany moment or a this is definitely what I'm going to do. It's been such an evolution of my identity and where I am in life and my experiences, and in some ways I've come back to that, and that's what I do now in terms of my coaching, is really work with personality traits and the complete individual, because we talk about it in the industry, you know, nothing's cookie cutter, and we talk about it, but do we really stand by those words? And I feel as though I finally got to that point where I really do, and that's such a core value of mine. So my story kind of starts really early on. I always knew I wanted to help people. You know, I was determined I was going to help people feel better, even as a child. And that's a reflection of my childhood experiences. And then I very much went down the science route. So even as a child, we had an amazing shop in town. It was called Human Nature. It was one of those shops I know other guests have talked about on the podcast where, you know, there's crystals, there's tarot cards. You know, this one had beautiful cards, like painted cards. And it was like a treasure trove. And I'd go in there and I'd feel amazing and I'd want to stay there forever. And then I kind of went down the science route and lost that side and lost that part and that joy and kind of that feeling of connection. I love science. I'm obsessed with it. It's a passion of mine and it's something I'm good at. So I went to university, I studied neuroscience, I got my honours degree. Then I went into sales and that's where it got a bit muddy. So that's where I really, I guess, if you want to look at it with hindsight, I learned about who I was. I made some decisions now that I wish I hadn't made, but I obviously made them for a reason. I obviously made them because somewhere I was meant to. I was meant to learn about myself. And now I've got to the point where I'm much more confident in who I am. I know who I am. I know what my values are. And I want to be able to help people do that journey, but in a much easier way than the way that I did it. So somewhere along the line, cut a long story short, I retrained. I was a trained massage therapist, and we'll go into that when we talk about balancing work and having a child. And I had a really successful business, and the two worked well, parenthood and this, but I was missing that helping people in a deeper way. So I trained as an NLP practitioner and as a life coach. And I was, I think, the only person in that academy that had ever studied both of them at the same time. And it took me just over a year. And then as a result of that, I actually won an award for academic achievement. So I really poured everything into learning the skills, learning the models in coaching to be able to help people. And since then, I've brought in other things, particularly personality traits. So looking at Carl Jung's work and bringing in more of the NLP world, so metaprogramming, to make sure that I'm helping the complete individual and not trying to get them to fit into a box. So that's where I'm here now. And although I can help anyone, as any coach would say, my passion is helping parents, whether you're a mum or a dad. It's a different world when you have children. Your mindset changes, and a lot of the time resistance comes up to that change. But navigating through it in a way that means you get to retain your values, get to retain your dreams and your ambitions, but you still get to be a present parent, is a tough balance. And that's what I really want to help people with.
That's so lovely. And when you were working as a massage therapist, were you on your spiritual journey then, or did that come afterwards?
I think it's always been there. And I know you asked me before we started recording when my spiritual awakening happened and how I'm experiencing it. And I read that and I was like, am I? Is that what's happening? Because I still have that resistance that comes up, that kind of expectation that it's not what we talk about, it's not the done thing, and that science and spirituality can't coexist. But what I'm learning more and more is that both have a place at the table. And at the moment, I'm studying my master's in psychology of mental health and well-being. And a lot of the time, positive psychology does come up. And in fact, we do talk about spiritualism and religion and the effects that that has on mindset and development and behavior. So it's definitely becoming more and more commonplace and less taboo. And I think that's amazing. So even back then, it was there, it was just kind of in the background. And I guess for most people it's the same, but in times of crisis and in times when you're really low, that's when you kind of, it comes back. And that's really nice in a way, knowing that something's always there for you, whether or not you're giving it the time and the space, that it's always there supporting you. And that's sort of how I feel about it. So my awakening wasn't like, or isn't, if I'm having it, this is it, light bulb moment, we're going from this to this. And it's a big shift. For me, it's definitely been a slow burner. And I think now, given the last year that I've had with my health, I've kind of let my walls down a little bit with it. And some of the things that have come up have been, I can't explain them, and they've been quite profound. So I'm learning to be a bit more open. And I think that's a good lesson, whether it is to do with a spiritual awakening or it's to do with anything in life. Allowing those walls to come down a little bit so that you've got the space to have possibility, I think, is a really beautiful thing to do.
I love that. And I love that you brought up science v spirituality, because I've never seen it as a contest. And I think part of that is because of my brother. So I've got an older brother and he's now a vicar, but he was a science teacher and he was head of science. And him and his wife both went to Oxford University. They met at Oxford. Super, super clever. She did biochemistry and has a PhD in it. And he did biology. So they're like top of the field in science. I mean, she was a researcher at Cancer Research UK, and they gave their careers up to revolve their life around the church, and he's now a priest. And the way they met was through the church. So for them, it was never a separate thing. It was never, oh, I have this very strong connection to my religion and science is a separate thing. And what my brother says has always been that I believe in the Big Bang. But who orchestrated the Big Bang? Who put the matter there? And I'm like, that makes sense. And I think, you know, as far back as science can go, there's always some kind of beginning. And when you experience miracles in everyday life and you experience your prayers being answered and synchronicities and signs and things like that, it's just so hard to deny. Even if it's hard to explain, it's also hard to deny. So I always think they go hand in hand. And when I start to watch videos on YouTube about quantum physics and consciousness, it's almost like it's not a line with science at one end and spirituality at the other. It almost becomes a circle where eventually they just go all the way around and they merge back and they just blend together. When you get to the edge of science, it starts to become spirituality. And when you get to the edge of spirituality, then it kind of turns into science.
That's an incredible way of looking at it. And I definitely feel the same, that we couldn't explain everything. You know, if you go back hundreds and hundreds and, you know, hundreds of years, we couldn't explain everything then. And we developed science as a way to explore the subjective experience and explain it in a way that we could comprehend. And now we're getting to the place where we can't comprehend everything. So we're having to try and use science again to bridge that gap. And I think that's what it is. We are forever learning as human beings. That is the human experience, to learn, to absorb, to grow. And that, surely that's why the two can sit next to each other at the table, because they both have a place. We're learning from each of them. And I think that's sort of the mindset that I'm now getting more into, that there can be both and I'm comfortable with both, and that's okay. Like, I love science. I love explaining things. You know, give me a scientific paper any day. Obviously studying a master's, so clearly I love science. But even in psychology, we get, like you say, to the edge of it, and there is those questions. It almost turns into philosophy, and all of those things merge together. And it's like this tapestry, and I think it's just ever-growing.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So that was a good tangent to go off. I enjoyed that. And I liked when you talked about the metaphysical shop as well, because I remember when I was a teenager, I was kind of a gothic teenager, and we had this shop in Poole where I grew up called the Lemon Tree. And it's on the high street, and unfortunately it closed down, but we would all just hang outside, and because they sold kind of gothic clothes, but they had incense and crystal and, you know, the type of shop. But I was always drawn to it, exactly the same as you. And it was funny because before COVID, we used to do a week in Cornwall every summer with my family. I was born in Cornwall, so was my brother, so was my sister. My grandparents still live there. So we have a huge connection to Cornwall. We used to go for a week every summer, and we'd go with my brother and my sister, and they've got all of their kids. And when we go into this metaphysical shop, the kids would be like, oh, can I get this crystal? Oh, I want this key ring. And it was so nice just watching them light up. And I was like, I know when you're older, you're going to be like me, because I was so drawn to it as well when I was younger. So I definitely think what you're drawn to at a young age can come back around later in life.
Yeah. And funny story around that as well. I recently finally got to go on a trip with my son. We went to the Isle of Wight. So actually not far from Southampton, where you were the other day. And we went into a shop and it had all of, like, it was a bit like that, but it also had other things. And the thing that he picked out that he wanted was a mood ring. And it brought back so many memories. And he was like, you put it on, mum. I bet it's going to be, I think he was like red or something. And he had his little piece of paper out and he was like checking it. And he's like, oh, look, now I'm green. That means I'm this. And I think that phase of discovery and excitement and joy is such a nice thing to see. And it just brought back all of those memories, like you say, of being in those shops and asking for things and getting excited and not having that veil of trying to explain it. Like, he wasn't interested in why it was doing it. He just accepted it and was excited by it. And that's a lesson for all of us, I think.
Definitely, definitely. We definitely lose that as we grow up. I'm just about to write a blog, actually, which might be out by the time people are listening to this, but it's about five things that block our intuition. And I was creating the outline for it yesterday. And one of them is cynicism. When we become overly cynical, and basically cynicism is another word for distrust, distrusting everything, needing to explain everything. And of course, that's helpful sometimes. I mean, that's pretty much what science is. But when we allow that to take over everything in our lives, and we need to explain everything and make everything kind of left-brained and logical, then we can lose that wonder, like you say, and we don't allow miracles to just happen and just accept them for what they are, because we need to explain them away and basically take the magic out of them.
Mm-hmm. It's a phrase that I often say to my clients and I share whenever I do workshops, is to choose curiosity over judgment. I generally talk about it in terms of the self and sort of inner dialogue and, you know, mum guilt, which we'll talk about, and things like that. But it is letting go of that need to explain it and give a label to it or make it make sense. Allow it to be a bit more expansive. And we talk about, there's an NLP meta program, and you usually have a preference one or the other, whether it's necessity or possibility. You know, there's space for both, and you do need both, but allowing yourself to move into that possibility rather than it has to be like this, it must be like this, this is what I have to do, you move into that it could be this, maybe I could do this, or maybe I could try this. If you go into that possibility rather than necessity, it takes away that cynicism, it takes away that need to put things in a box, and it's really, really amazing feeling, so everyone should try it.
Definitely. And I wrote about in my book, I wrote about a time where I had a synchronicity, and I talked about how the difference between a synchronicity and just something happening, for example, a feather falling down in front of you. You could say, oh, there's a bird's nest up there, that's why a feather just fell down. But can you imagine all the signs that you'd miss? And I say in my book, the way you know it's a synchronicity is how it feels, because sometimes it could just be a bird flying overhead and a feather falls off. But you know it's a synchronicity when it lines up perfectly with something that you're thinking, or you get an incredible feeling wash over you. You know when it's a message, you know when it's a synchronicity. And can you imagine if you were overly cynical and every single time you saw a repeating number, every single time you saw a feather, every sign you ever got or every feeling you ever got, you were trying to analyze and judge and being cynical about, you would never get anything. You'd never get any guidance. So yeah, I think this is definitely an important point to make. And I know that over time, I've become so much less rigid than I used to be. And that's just generally allowed me to be more, I wasn't rigid in terms of like being judgmental for other people, but rigid in myself, like very, very, very structured. I have to do this, I have to do that, push, push, push. And I'm still very driven, but I've definitely allowed myself to just flow more. Like I was talking to you before we started recording, how I was having a massive introvert day yesterday because I was still recovering from recording my audiobook. And I had multiple things on my list that I wanted to kind of film or record. And I just couldn't do any of it. So I just stayed on the sofa just doing things on my laptop all day. Whereas today, I've got my makeup on, I've got my lipstick on, I'm recording this, I'm going to film some things after this. And now I'm having an extrovert day. Whereas before, I'd be a lot more rigid. And I'd be like, no, this is the to-do list, I'm going to do this, instead of allowing any kind of space to just flow and be and work intuitively.
Definitely. And I feel that too, with myself, and we were talking about it just before actually, that I was saying, particularly with this year, I've had to do that. I've had to let things go. And if I don't have the answers or the tools or a way of changing it right now, I have to let it go. Otherwise, it's exhausting and it's all consuming. And I think that translates also to anyone else that is going through a spiritual awakening. Sometimes let it go and just see what comes up. And it's a life skill as well. We can't all do it straight off the bat. You can't just say, that's what I'm going to do. It's a skill, it's something to practice.
So I feel like this is a good point. We've been going on so many tangents, but I've been loving it. We should probably start bringing this round to your journey as a mother, because I feel like it actually ties in quite nicely. And you touched on mum guilt earlier, and you talked about when you were working as a massage therapist. So did you become a massage therapist due to being a mother?
Yeah, so I obviously took this deviation into sales, which wasn't good for me, didn't reflect my values at all. And then, you know, I got made redundant quite a few times and kept going back. You know, these were signs, like, maybe don't keep going back. And I did, and then I fell pregnant. And so I was, again, forced to leave that career. And so I was on maternity leave and thinking this through and thinking, like, financially, logistically, how is this going to work? And at the time I was married, so I had a certain amount of maternity leave, and I decided in that time that I would retrain in a job that would mean that I could be a present parent. And I know this isn't a luxury that all parents are afforded. It was definitely a choice I made, and I was in the fortunate position that I could make that choice. So I took maternity leave whilst I was being paid and retrained. And so I actually did night school. So I went a night a week, and it was when my son was actually 6 weeks old that I started the course. And the people on there couldn't believe that I was there, but I was so determined that I was going to have a way of doing both. So it took 6 months and I qualified as a massage therapist. And then I did little bits of it as I could, but obviously my son was still so tiny. And like I said, I was in a partnership at the time. Fast forward a little bit, and actually I separated from my then husband when my son was just about a year old and became a single parent. And that was when I really had to fall back on that and start balancing working and parenthood. And so I would do both of them at the same time and steal time where I could to keep the skills up until the age that he could go to nursery. And then that's when, you know, the balancing changed. And I talk about this with my clients, and I believe I've written a blog about it as well, where we have to shift each time there's a change. We have to shift with it. And I've had to change my mindset and change how I manage my time as a reflection of each of those shifts. So parenthood is never a static thing. It's not, I'm not a parent and then I'm a parent. It's forever changing, and you almost have to be a chameleon and be adaptive. And I know you talked about the fear of balancing it, and maybe that doesn't support you in feeling better about that, but truly something in you, in your head, shifts when you become a parent. And knowing when to make those changes in your time management, in your organization, is a skill, and you get better at it. But the best thing is to just retain those core values, retain those dreams. There's always a way of doing things, always, always, always. Sometimes you have to bridge those changes, and sometimes they're easier. But from my experience, what I can say is there is always a way. So I managed to balance this, building my massage therapy business with parenting. And now he's obviously at school, so I have my 5.5 hours a day that I fit in my work. And then when he's home, I've got my mum head on. And I love that kind of, that separation. For me, that's really important. For me, it's a boundary. When I'm with my son, I'm his mum, and I've not got my head in a laptop. When he's at school, you know, I get to be me, and I get to use that time how it reflects me and what I need to do at the time.
And do you find that when you're with your son, do you have any desire to, like, go on your laptop? Do you go on your laptop after he's gone to bed or anything like that? Or are you quite good at keeping it within those 5.5 hours? Because that just sounds so small to me right now.
You definitely learn to be a little bit more fixed, isn't the right word, but I have some incredible time management skills that I've honed over the years to help me make sure that in that time I get what I need done. Although it sounds like a short amount of time, actually, when you're focused and you know I've got this window to do this, it's much, much easier. But yeah, it's been tricky, but certainly it's doable. I do turn my laptop off. It's shut down. I don't tend to use it when he's around. but every now and again, there are things. So for example, I might do workshops in the evening and they start just before he's going to bed. So there are overlaps. It's always going to happen. It's your life, but that's okay. It's okay. And rigidity is not the way forward.
Another thing I worry about as well is fitting in life admin. So, you know, for example, food shopping and housework or just bits and bobs. Like, for example, this Saturday, I just had a whole morning of life admin. I had to go to the bank and change my name. I took my wedding dresses to a shop to be sold. And I just had this list. I had to take a parcel to be returned, but it was like a DHL one. So the nearest drop off point was like quite far away. And I was just going around doing all these bits. And how do you fit that stuff in as well? Because I just feel like it's not just about your work and then, you know, mother time. There's also all the life stuff as well that needs to be done.
Yeah. So when they're tiny, it's, you know, it's difficult because you're almost working to their needs and their schedule is not your own. Something you just manage, you prioritize, you choose what needs to be done at that time and you fit it in around them. I think it's unfair to say that, I mean, most parents and every parent say that their children are the most important thing in the world to them, and it's absolutely true. But that doesn't mean that it's one or the other. You don't forego you, your lifestyle, and everything that made you up until that point. So when it comes to fitting in things you want to do, whether it's life admin or actually something you are joyful about and you want to include in your life, you can find ways of being flexible. So obviously I was a single parent from when he was about one, and I still wanted to travel. I still wanted to go places. I still wanted to, you know, I wasn't massively into going out, but I loved traveling and I loved adventures and finding new places. And so I just found ways of doing that with him. And I mean, that's the exciting things, but life admin, you find ways of making it fun to do with them. So for example, I remember a time I had to take something back to a House of Fraser store and it was a half an hour drive away, because I don't live anywhere near a big shop. But I knew that that House of Fraser had one of the Brio train track things in the children's wear department. I mean, genius on the side of marketing. But it meant we could turn it into a day out. So he'd go, he'd play with the cars, I'd take my thing back, and we'd go for lunch. So you kind of work around that side of things. It's not easy, and I'm not going to sit here and, you know, tell everyone to put their rose-tinted glasses on. It's not easy, but it's also not a case of you have your kids or you choose to have children or you are, you know, a carer and that's your life and therefore you have to forgo everything. And this is where this loss of identity and loss of confidence often comes up, and it's what I see with parents that I work with, is that they feel that they've lost part of themselves and they're desperate to go back. I hear this a lot, go back to how it was. And that doesn't mean that they don't love their children and love how things are now. They just feel like something's missing and that they can't grasp who they are now and how things have changed, because it's such a dichotomy sometimes. And first off, never try and go back to where you were, because it's an amazing thing when you get to grow and learn and change. But secondly, it doesn't mean you have to give up your values. It doesn't mean you have to give up your identity. It's just finding ways of letting that shine through and finding other ways to feel that works in harmony with being a parent. And that is a skill, and that's why I do what I do, to try and help people navigate that. So the journey takes less time than it took me. It took me a long time to find that confidence again, to kind of find my place and bed down. And there was a lot of choices that I made that in hindsight I probably wouldn't have, but we were talking before about how that made me who I am and able to pass on that knowledge and that experience to other people, to other parents. And so if you are in that place where you feel like you're missing part of yourself, or you've lost who you are, or you don't feel like you're moving forward, you're just on this hamster wheel of every day, there's not that excitement, that buzz anymore, then go back to, what do you want to feel? So is it that you want to go back to how things are? Because trust me, nobody wants to go back to exactly how they were at 25. It was awful. Use that wealth of experience, and what is that feeling you want to feel? What does confidence mean to you? What is this identity? Try and start to assign feelings and words and adjectives to that. And then look for things that fit that. What other ways could you create to feel that? So I'll give you an example. For me, I wanted to feel confident again. I love trying new things, and that gives me a buzz. I'm a huge introvert, but for me, going out of my comfort zone every now and again is exhilarating, and I love it. So I actually took up pole dancing or pole fitness to boost my confidence, to give that buzz again, because that's the feeling I wanted. I wanted that rush, that feeling that I was doing something unusual and different. And it was just for me. It was just me and an instructor. And that's what I did. So sometimes bridging that gap to find the feeling rather than trying to go back to how it was is the better way of finding that confidence and identity again as a parent.
So much great advice there. And what do you think was the biggest shock, something that you didn't expect, that you would never have seen about yourself or the way you feel being a parent before you had children? Is there anything which you just didn't expect to happen when you became a parent?
So I guess I'm quite a romantic. So I sort of thought, you know, have a parent and you'd be 2.4 children and I'd have more children. And I sort of mapped it out in my head. So, I mean, it's not an aha moment, but the biggest shock for me was becoming a single parent. I didn't expect that to happen. It wasn't, you know, I married somebody that I'd known for a long time, and it wasn't something I expected to happen. So that for me was the biggest shocker. But also on balance, it's the thing that helped me grow the most and learn the most about myself. And it really was the making of me. And so, again, it's why I do what I do now, because it was messy and it was hard and it was difficult. And if I can even help 1%, you know, that one parent feel 1% better about that journey, that it's not quite so hard, then I'd feel incredible. And also, you know, to try and help that more, I actually volunteered with an organisation called Frolo, which work with solo parents, and I do workshops with them to support their parents. So it's something I'm so hugely passionate about. There is a way to have it all, in quote marks. It just might look different to how it looked before you were a parent.
I love your approach. I love your attitude. And I think it's such great work that you're doing. And I love that you said it was the making of you, that the hardest thing you've possibly gone through, or one of the hardest things you've been through, was the making of you. And in a way, it's kind of defined a lot of the work that you do now. So do you just work with single parents or people that are entrepreneurs, or just parents in general who are feeling these feelings you talked about before?
Yeah, so I guess I'm the typical life coach in that I could work with anyone, and it's more to do with whether my approach is the right approach for you, because I work with NLP metaprograms and personality traits. So really looking at total individual, like we map you out at the beginning, we talk about which approaches will actually work for you and how you see your internal and external worlds. So I can work with anyone, but I have this real drive in me. And again, this might come back to what I guess you would call interventions, divine interventions or signs or patterns. I always come back to this passion for working with parents. And so whether you are a mum or a dad or a single parent or a long-term carer, but you know, your role is to take care of children, then that's where I shine. And that's where I really love to see that sparkle, that joy come back to people, that, you know, they don't feel like this is something that they've lost, that it's something that they've gained, and that it is something that they can learn from and enjoy, not just a day-to-day tick box exercise. You know, get up, feed the kids, go to work, come home, feed the kids, go to bed. That's not thriving. That's just getting by, and that's not okay. So if you want more and you have a drive that this isn't how it should be, it's probably because it isn't. You just haven't figured out the way yet, and that's okay.
And you mentioned you use a lot of personality tests and kind of systems, do you have a favorite personality test?
I don't tend to like test people, but I do invite people to do three things. One is to look at their main representation systems, so their sensory rep systems. So are they mostly drawn to learning through visual stimulus or audible, or is it through touch? So some people are kinesthetic, so it's very much about feelings. So I invite them to do that, and that really helps me know the best way to approach things. I also like to know their sort of Jungian personality type. Some people might know it as Myers-Briggs. So that gives me a lot of information about what they're drawn to. And again, that's really looking at somebody in the moment. It won't necessarily look at them as astrology might do for their entire lifespan. It's just looking at that moment, but I'm working with them in that moment. So that's why it helps me. And then again, we look at NLP metaprograms. There are many, 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 but I tend to look at introversion, extroversion, whether they're a towards positive or away from negative person. And again, we talked about necessity and possibility. So I bring in all those different things. We talk about it. And just through having a conversation with somebody, I generally know where they sit on those scales. And that gives me so much information about which models and which techniques are going to be the best ones to help them. And I love being able to do that. You know, I'm the kind of girl that I like choice and possibility. And I like it when I can see on the shelf all of the different things that make a set. You know, I'm a judging type. I like things to be complete and I like the full set. So if I collect a book, I have to have all of them, not just one. And so I love being able to approach my coaching in that way, that I know from what we've talked about and where you sit on those scales, which things, which tools to pick out of my sets to help you the best way possible.
Yes, I think the Myers-Briggs or the 16 personalities has probably been the most accurate one for me. I also like Enneagram. So I'm Enneagram 3. And when I read that, I was like, oh my goodness. Like when it talked about the shadow sides, it was like really hit my heart. And I almost felt kind of like, whoa, okay, they really see me. But I really like the 16 personalities as well. I think they're really, really accurate. And I like that you can see the scales. So I was really introverted when I did it. I think it was about 78% introvert.
Yeah. And it's a fantastic way of gaining a little bit more insight about, you know, who you are and what fits. And like you say, sometimes you can read it and you feel so seen. My sister recently messaged me and she said, have you done your Enneagram? What's your Enneagram? I was like, well, obviously. And so she messaged me and she said, I feel so seen. I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's really good. And I think they're so powerful. And I think this about astrology as well, because I recently got more into Vedic astrology, which has meant my signs have changed. And it also means my human design has changed. And it's been a really good exercise, actually, because it's made me so unattached from them. And I don't super identify with them, but I can also see parts of myself within certain signs. And I think that's where the power is. They're just a tool for self-reflection. When you're being presented this list of qualities, it gives you a chance to reflect and think, oh, I am like that. Oh, I'm not like that. And within that process, you're understanding yourself. And if you didn't have that tool being offered to you, for example, the star signs and their qualities, then you might never take that moment to think about who you are, what you like, how your personality is, how it's changing, perhaps. So I think these things are just such great opportunities for self-reflection and understanding.
Absolutely. And they should be looked upon as tools. And that's how I use them. They are not boxes to put somebody in to say, okay, you're a X, Y, Z, which means that we have to use this type of thing. It is a tool to learn about the person, to learn about the individual. And that's why in psychology, we call them states, because they're in flux. They may not stay the same. Generally, they do. And, you know, in some things like human design or astrology, perhaps they do stay the same. But generally, this is always in flux because your experiences are always changing and you're always growing. So we call it a state. And that's why it's so exciting as a tool, because it can help you where you are now. And as a coach, I want to meet you where you are and take you to the ideal or where you want to be heading. So it's incredible to help me kind of color in the picture of who you are. And it helps you at the same time, because you, like you say, have that opportunity to reflect.
And what's your favorite thing about doing this work?
I was thinking about this, and my favorite thing is later, not necessarily while I'm doing it in the coaching, in the moment, there are aha moments. It's sometimes weeks, months later, I'll have previous clients message me and say that they're still using the techniques that we went through. They're still using the tools that we put in place for them and thanking me for the work that we did together. That's for me the best part, because I know that what we did together gave them a foundation to keep building and to keep learning and to keep growing and to keep helping themselves. And so for me, that is the absolute hands down best part of it, because I know I've done my job. I know that I've helped somebody long term.
This has been so incredible. You shared so much great advice with us. For anyone listening who perhaps is a parent and maybe they really resonate with what you've said, where can people find you and how can you help them?
So the best place to find me is on Instagram. My handle is at I am Colleen Emily, and that's Colleen with two L's and two E's, spelled the Irish way. And there you can find all the information about how I work with clients, some really useful posts. Most of my posts are advice-based, so you can really gain a lot of insight there. And then I also have my website, www.colleenemily.com, and you can read more about my story and how I balance parenting with work.
Thank you so much, Colleen.
Thank you. That was so fun.
Thank you for listening to this episode, and please remember to subscribe to this podcast. I'm sure that, like me, you would love for more people to know this information. So if you leave a review and send me a screenshot of it on Instagram, which is at I Am Ms. Roberta, you'll get a $50 voucher code to use on one of my online course launches. This won't be around forever, so go and leave a review now, and I'll see you next time.